Heart disease remains the world's leading killer. Yet, what if everything we've been told about its causes is wrong? As a Scottish doctor, I witnessed my homeland achieve the dubious distinction of having the highest heart attack death rate worldwide. While conventional wisdom blamed saturated fat consumption, I couldn't reconcile this with the French paradox. How could the French, with their diet rich in butter, cream, and meat, have just one-fifth our cardiovascular disease rate? This contradiction launched me on a three-decade journey to uncover the true causes of heart disease. The book that emerged from this quest has become something of a medical underground sensation, celebrated by physicians brave enough to question orthodoxy and embraced by patients seeking alternatives to statin drugs. It represents the culmination of my life's work investigating what really causes our arteries to clog. What I discovered challenges the very foundations of cardiovascular medicine and offers a completely different framework for preventing heart attacks and strokes. The diet-heart hypothesis proposes that eating saturated fat raises cholesterol, which then deposits in arteries until blockage causes heart attacks. This theory gained momentum in the 1950s through Ansel Keys, dubbed Mr. Cholesterol, and eventually achieved the status of inarguable fact. But this hypothesis has a fatal flaw. It's physiologically impossible. First, a terminology clarification. No one actually has a cholesterol level. Cholesterol isn't water-soluble and can't float freely in blood. Instead, it's transported in lipoproteins, tiny spheres about the size of viruses. The lipoprotein currently blamed for cardiovascular disease is low-density lipoprotein, often misleadingly called bad cholesterol. When we eat saturated fat, it binds with bile salts in the bowel, gets absorbed into the gut wall, and is packed into large lipoproteins called chylomicrons. These travel through the thoracic duct directly into the bloodstream, crucially bypassing the liver. As chylomicrons circulate, they're stripped of fat by cells, primarily fat cells, gradually shrinking until they return to the liver for breakdown. This means dietary fat never initially reaches the liver, but goes straight to adipose tissue for storage. LDLs actually form when liver-produced VLDLs, which transport liver-synthesized fats, shrink as they deliver fatty acids around the body. For LDL levels to rise, VLDL levels must increase first, and what raises VLDL isn't saturated fat, but carbohydrates. When we consume excess carbohydrates, the liver converts them to fat once its glycogen storage capacity, about 500 calories, is reached. This newly created fat is packaged into VLDLs, which eventually become LDLs. The key point, eating more fat, saturated fat, reduces VLDL production, while eating more carbohydrate increases it, the exact opposite of conventional wisdom. Even more damning, large observational studies challenge the hypothesis that high cholesterol causes heart disease. A 1990 conference found that the highest mortality occurred at the lowest cholesterol levels. The massive Nord-Trendelenburg Health Study showed that in women, higher cholesterol levels were associated with longer lifespan and 40% reduced mortality risk. Their carefully worded conclusion suggested that moderately elevated cholesterol, up to 7 millimoles, now considered dangerously high, may be not only harmless, but even beneficial, especially for women. For over 150 years, two competing hypotheses have battled to explain cardiovascular disease. While the cholesterol hypothesis has dominated, an alternative view, the thrombogenic hypothesis, proposes that blood clots are the key players in cardiovascular disease from beginning to end. This alternative theory suggests atherosclerotic plaques are actually remnants of blood clots that formed on artery walls after damage to the arterial lining. These clots get covered by new arterial lining, effectively incorporating them into the artery wall. Normally, these remnant clots are broken down and removed. However, if damage occurs frequently, larger clots form, or repair systems falter, repeated clotting at the same location leads to growing plaques that eventually narrow the artery and restrict blood flow. Over years, these plaques develop various forms, from tough, fibrous structures to dangerous, vulnerable plaques with liquid cores covered by thin caps that can rupture, triggering additional clotting. Examining actual plaques reveal they're not simply cholesterol deposits, but complex structures containing red blood cells, fibrin, platelets, white blood cells, smooth muscle cells, calcium, and collagen. End-stage plaques typically consist of 87% fibrous tissue, 7% calcific deposits, 5% pultaceous debris, and only 1% foam cells. Despite this composition, popular medical websites misleadingly describe atherosclerotic plaques as cholesterol plaques, with LDL as their raw material. This contradicts scientific findings. The American Heart Association's exhaustive classification of plaques barely mentions cholesterol, instead listing components like smooth muscle cells, macrophages, lymphocytes, lipoproteins, proteoglycans, collagen, elastin, and calcium. Research by Velikin and Velikin, who studied arteries from hundreds of accident victims of various ages, definitively showed that fatty streaks, often cited as early cholesterol deposits, do not develop into atherosclerotic plaques. Instead, they observed that clinically significant plaques contain layer upon layer of small blood clots, which they termed incorporated microthrombi. Understanding cardiovascular disease requires familiarity with several key players: the arteries and atherosclerosis, the endothelium, the glycocalyx, blood clots/thrombi, endothelial progenitor cells, and nitric oxide. The endothelium lines all blood vessels and consists of two thin layers: endothelial cells facing the bloodstream and the supportive subendothelial layer beneath. With a surface area the size of a football pitch, the endothelium functions as a separate organ of the body. In arteries large enough for plaques to develop, healthy endothelial cells form an absolute barrier preventing substances from entering the artery wall. The glycocalyx, unknown to roughly 99.8% of doctors, is a layer of proteins and sugars covering endothelial cells that acts as nature's super Teflon. This slippery protective coating contains powerful anticoagulants like tissue factor inhibitor, antithrombin, protein C, and nitric oxide. Despite its fragility, it can completely repair itself in less than a second by absorbing plasma constituents. Blood clotting represents perhaps the most sophisticated self-regulating system in the body. The key players in creating a thrombus are platelets, which act as both initial plugs and conductors of the clotting system, fibrin, strong sticky strands that bind clots together, and red blood cells, which bind to fibrin and tighten the structure. Endothelial progenitor cells, EPCs, are the only possible source of new endothelial cells, since mature endothelial cells cannot easily replicate themselves. EPCs are manufactured in bone marrow and circulate in the bloodstream, migrating toward injured areas where they adhere to thrombi and develop into new endothelial layers. Nitric oxide, NO, is arguably the single most important molecule for cardiovascular health. Once called endothelium-derived relaxation factor, this free radical gas dilates blood vessels, lowers blood pressure, stimulates production of endothelial progenitor cells, and serves as the body's most powerful anticoagulant by preventing anything from sticking to the glycocalyx/endothelium. Having identified the key players, the thrombogenic process follows a remarkably simple pattern that unfolds in distinct stages. First, the endothelium, the delicate inner lining of blood vessels, sustains damage from various sources, including mechanical stress, inflammation, or biochemical injury. This damage exposes the underlying tissue, triggering the body's natural repair response. A blood clot then forms over the damaged area as protection, composed primarily of platelets and fibrin, creating a protective seal, much like a scab on external wounds. Once stabilized, this clot gradually reduces in size through a process called fibrinolysis, while endothelial progenitor cells, specialized stem cells circulating in the bloodstream, move in to cover it. These cells effectively incorporate the remnant clot into the arterial wall, beginning the transformation into what we recognize as plaque. Finally, macrophages arrive to clear away the remnant clot material, though their effectiveness varies significantly based on multiple factors, including inflammation levels and metabolic health. This represents the normal, healthy repair process that occurs countless times throughout our vasculature. Problems arise and plaques begin to form and grow under three main circumstances. When endothelial damage occurs at an increased rate, as with high blood pressure or smoking, when the resulting blood clots are larger or more resistant to breakdown than normal, often seen in diabetes, or when the repair systems are impaired in some way, common in autoimmune conditions. Many risk factors in the Q-RISC-3 calculator, a standard tool for assessing cardiovascular risk, are merely associations, not direct causes. Take postcode, zip code. Living in socially deprived areas dramatically increases CVD risk, with studies showing a staggering 28-year life expectancy difference between poor Calton and affluent Lindsay in Glasgow. But location itself doesn't kill you. Rather, it's the associated psychosocial stress, depression, smoking, poor diet, limited access to healthcare, and other behavioral and environmental factors that drive disease progression. Among the genuine causes of cardiovascular disease, several stand out for their direct impact on the thrombogenic process. Smoking damages endothelial cells directly, while increasing inflammation and oxidative stress. Diabetes affects both clot formation and breakdown through glycation of proteins. Raised blood pressure causes mechanical stress on vessel walls, leading to repeated endothelial injury. Chronic kidney disease alters mineral metabolism and increases inflammation. Autoimmune conditions like rheumatoid arthritis and systemic lupus erythematosus create systemic inflammation that accelerates endothelial damage. Certain medications, including atypical antipsychotics and steroids, can affect clotting factors and metabolic health. Even conditions like migraines have been shown to involve vascular dysfunction that may contribute to plaque formation. Each of these factors plays a crucial role in the development of CVD through specific mechanisms that align perfectly with the thrombogenic hypothesis, creating a complex web of interactions that can either protect or damage our cardiovascular system. Smoking inflicts devastating damage on the cardiovascular system with alarming speed and efficiency. Within seconds of lighting a cigarette, toxic nanoparticles breach the lungs' protective barriers, entering through the alveoli where the endothelium becomes unnaturally permeable. These particles are so minute they easily cross the blood-tissue barrier. A single cigarette destroys such a vast number of endothelial cells that their fragments, microparticles, become readily detectable in routine blood tests. Even more concerning, these effects compound with each cigarette, creating a cascade of continuous damage to the vessel walls. Environmental pollutants mirror this destructive process through identical pathways. Vehicle exhaust fumes, industrial air pollution, wood smoke from fireplaces, and coal dust from mining operations all release harmful nanoparticles that infiltrate our circulation. These particles not only damage the endothelium directly, but trigger a three-pronged assault. They reduce vital nitric oxide availability, create an inflammatory environment, and promote blood clotting. Urban dwellers face particularly high risks, with studies showing that people living near major highways experience significantly higher rates of cardiovascular events. This explains why chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD, has emerged as the predominant risk factor for cardiovascular disease. The continuous inhalation of toxic substances simultaneously deteriorates both lung tissue and blood vessels, creating a devastating feedback loop of damage. Lead exposure represents an insidious threat to cardiovascular health, acting as a silent killer that accumulates over decades. Once this heavy metal enters the body, through contaminated water, old paint, or industrial exposure, it establishes a permanent presence, storing itself in bone tissue and gradually leaching into the bloodstream over years or even decades. The statistics are staggering. Approximately 400,000 deaths annually in the U.S. can be traced to lead exposure, with around 250,000 of these being cardiovascular in nature. Lead's mechanism of damage is particularly efficient. It directly binds to and inhibits endothelial nitric oxide synthase, critically reducing nitric oxide production. Additionally, it induces red blood cells to become more prone to clotting, significantly increasing the risk of thrombosis and cardiovascular events. Diabetes compounds these cardiovascular risks through multiple destructive pathways. The disease doesn't just reduce nitric oxide synthesis and damage the endothelium, it creates a perfect storm of vascular dysfunction. High blood sugar levels strip away the glycocalyx, a delicate protective layer covering the endothelium that acts as a first line of defense against damage. This loss of protection, combined with reduced circulation of endothelial progenitor cells, which normally help repair vessel damage, creates a particularly vulnerable state. The combination of increased blood coagulation, chronic inflammation, and compromised repair mechanisms makes diabetic patients especially susceptible to cardiovascular complications, often leading to accelerated progression of heart disease. The final pieces of the cardiovascular puzzle involve mental health and stress, a complex interplay that dramatically impacts heart health through multiple pathways. Severe mental illness, atypical antipsychotic medication, and steroid tablets all connect through a single common thread, cortisol, the body's primary stress hormone, which acts as a master regulator of metabolism and inflammation. Cortisol is a steroid hormone produced in the adrenal glands in response to stress signals from the brain. As a key fight-or-flight hormone, it triggers multiple survival-oriented changes. Glucose synthesis in the liver increases dramatically, proteins are broken down to make more glucose, and fat is released from subcutaneous stores to provide emergency energy. While these responses are beneficial during actual physical threats or exertion, chronically elevated cortisol leads to destructive energy redistribution patterns. Subcutaneous fat and muscle tissue are steadily depleted, while visceral fat accumulates dangerously in the abdomen, particularly around vital organs. The metabolic effects of cortisol are far-reaching. It directly antagonizes insulin's actions, causing cells to become insulin-resistant and potentially triggering type 2 diabetes. In the cardiovascular system, cortisol suppresses nitric oxide synthesis, raising blood pressure, damages the protective glycocalyx layer of blood vessels, impairs endothelial function, and stimulates excess production of blood clotting factors, creating a perfect storm for cardiovascular disease. Severe mental illness, particularly major depression, powerfully disrupts the hypothalamus-pituitary-adrenal axis, the body's stress response system. Studies show that 40-60% of depressed patients experience hypercortisolemia or other significant HPA disturbances. This dysregulation creates a bidirectional and self-reinforcing link between stress, depression, and type 2 diabetes mellitus. Research has demonstrated that depression can actually drive the development of type 2 diabetes, an association first noted in 1919 when doctors described nervous glycosuria in mentally ill patients. Schizophrenia represents perhaps the most severe manifestation of mental illness-induced metabolic dysfunction, with profound HPA axis disruption that affects multiple organ systems. The cardiovascular consequences are particularly devastating. While schizophrenia patients are 10 to 20 times more likely than the general population to commit suicide, more than two-thirds of those who don't die by suicide ultimately succumb to coronary heart disease. This elevated cardiovascular risk stems from both direct biological effects of the illness and indirect factors like poor self-care, social isolation, and side effects of antipsychotic medications. Modern research has revealed that chronic psychological stress, even at subclinical levels, can trigger similar metabolic disruptions through persistent cortisol elevation. This helps explain why conditions like workplace stress, relationship difficulties, and caregiver burden are associated with increased cardiovascular risk. Understanding these connections has led to growing interest in stress reduction techniques like meditation, mindfulness, and cognitive behavioral therapy as potential cardioprotective interventions. Psychological stressors can be devastatingly harmful, often leading to cardiovascular disease through HPA axis dysfunction. These stressors manifest in numerous ways: childhood neglect, leaving lasting physiological scars; battlefield trauma, creating persistent hypervigilance; workplace bullying, triggering chronic stress responses; and financial collapse, destroying one's sense of security. Additional factors like systemic racism, chronic job insecurity, social isolation, and forced displacement can create a cascade of biological responses that directly impact heart health. The body's stress response system, designed for acute threats, becomes chronically activated, leading to inflammation, elevated blood pressure, and accelerated arterial damage. Lithuania provides a fascinating case study of how social upheaval affects cardiovascular health. Comparing death rates from CHD in Lithuanian men under 65 with their UK counterparts reveals a startling pattern. Both countries started with similar rates, but by 1992, Lithuania's rate was nearly four times higher. This dramatic spike coincided precisely with the fall of the Soviet Union in 1989 and Lithuania's singing revolution. The country experienced massive social upheaval. Entire industries collapsed overnight. Lifetime savings became worthless. Soviet tanks rolled through streets and established social networks disintegrated. The psychological impact was profound, with uncertainty permeating every aspect of daily life, from job security to personal safety. Indigenous populations worldwide suffer catastrophically high rates of cardiovascular disease, reflecting the devastating health consequences of colonization. Australian Aboriginals have the world's worst Indigenous life expectancy, dying up to 20 years earlier than non-Indigenous Australians. Young Aboriginal women have 30 times the predicted CHD death rate calculated by standard risk assessment tools, an astonishing 2,900% increase. This disparity reflects multiple intersecting factors: historical trauma, disruption of traditional lifestyles, systematic discrimination, reduced access to healthcare, and the destruction of cultural support systems that traditionally provided resilience against stress. Yet some communities dramatically defy these patterns. The Rosettans in Pennsylvania maintained remarkably low heart attack rates despite behaviors violating conventional health recommendations: smoking unfiltered cigars, drinking wine abundantly, working dangerous jobs, and eating diets rich in lard, sausages, and cholesterol-laden foods. What protected them? They were nourished by people through strong family ties and cohesive community relationships. Their social structure featured multiple generations living together, regular community gatherings, strong civic engagement, and a culture where success was celebrated collectively rather than individually. This social cohesion created a protective buffer against the physiological effects of stress, demonstrating how community connection can override traditionally recognized risk factors for heart disease. The Rosetto effect highlights a crucial insight. Cardiovascular health isn't merely about individual choices, but is profoundly influenced by social connections and community support. This understanding suggests that public health interventions focusing solely on individual behavior modification might be missing a crucial component of heart disease prevention: the healing power of human connection and social solidarity. Having explored the processes behind cardiovascular disease development, we now turn to practical prevention strategies. The approach examines actions that can damage or protect the glycocalyx/endothelium, affect blood clot formation, or influence the repair process. For type 2 diabetes, the key to reversal is emptying glucose/glycogen stores through high-intensity exercise and limiting carbohydrate intake. Dr. David Unwin's research has demonstrated remarkable success with low-carbohydrate diets for diabetes, achieving 46% drug-free remission rates, 93% pre-diabetes remission, significant improvements in weight and blood pressure, and substantial cost savings. Managing HPA axis dysfunction through relaxation techniques is remarkably effective. Studies show biofeedback and relaxation significantly decrease blood glucose and A1C levels compared to control groups. One fascinating German study found yoga could lower systolic blood pressure by up to 21 millimeters of mercury following heart attacks in men, more effective than most medications. For raised blood pressure, I recommend ACE inhibitors, drugs ending in pril, as first-line therapy, particularly perindopril, which best stimulates nitric oxide synthesis. These medications don't just lower blood pressure, but provide additional cardiovascular benefits. Exercise is highly beneficial as it increases nitric oxide and lowers blood pressure through multiple mechanisms. The focus on sodium salt, NaCl, has been misguided. What truly matters is potassium salt, not sodium restriction. Our Stone Age ancestors consumed about 16 times more potassium than sodium, whereas modern diets contain twice as much sodium as potassium. Potassium relaxes blood vessel walls, lowers blood pressure, and protects against muscle cramping. Sun exposure offers remarkable health benefits beyond mere enjoyment. Being outdoors improves mood even without exercise, enhances cognitive function, and increases vitamin D synthesis from cholesterol. Higher vitamin D levels protect against many cancers and cardiovascular diseases. Even more importantly, sunlight helps the body synthesize nitric oxide, which lowers blood pressure, prevents blood clots, improves insulin sensitivity, and can even reverse type 2 diabetes. Looking at the most significant factors damaging the endothelium reveals their impact on life expectancy. The worst offenders include drug and alcohol abuse, reducing lifespan by 24 years, type 2 diabetes, 20 years, significant mental illness like bipolar disorder or schizophrenia, 9 to 20 years, smoking, 10 years, lack of exercise, 5 years, air pollution, 4 years, PPI use, 2 years, raised blood pressure, 18 months, and periodontal disease, 18 months. Rather than focusing solely on what to avoid, there are positive actions to optimize endothelial health, protecting the glycocalyx and increasing nitric oxide synthesis. The glycocalyx, our first line of defense against endothelial damage, consists mainly of glycoproteins that prevent platelets and white blood cells from adhering to the endothelium. There are numerous ways to improve nitric oxide synthesis beyond exercise, relaxation techniques, and diabetes management. Top recommendations include increased sun exposure, L-arginine, L-citrulline, coenzyme Q10, sildenafil, Viagra, nasal breathing, certain vegetables, dark chocolate, red wine, and animal organs like liver. Many foods naturally boost nitric oxide production. Beyond red wine and dark chocolate, beneficial foods include beets, garlic, leafy greens, citrus fruits, nuts, seeds, and watermelon. Meat of any kind is valuable for its L-arginine content. Rather than providing endless lists of superfoods, I recommend a simple approach. Eat food that looks like food, natural, minimally processed items without lengthy ingredient lists. The most important supplements for general cardiovascular health include vitamin D in winter, vitamin C, potassium, magnesium, and L-arginine citrulline. For those already diagnosed with heart disease, consider adding chondroitin sulfate, thiamine, coenzyme Q10, possibly Viagra, and low-dose aspirin, especially with clotting disorders. I hope I've clarified cardiovascular disease, its causes, and prevention. It's regrettable that the pioneering ideas of Rokitansky, Duguid, Ross, and Smith were overshadowed by the cholesterol hypothesis. The thrombogenic process appears to accommodate all cardiovascular risk factors I've encountered. Science is always evolving, and this model will surely need refinement. All we can do is advance understanding incrementally, adding a few bricks to science's cathedral. Perhaps then you can die happily at 103. from a sudden heart attack, which in my opinion is the best way to go.